Welcome to Money Radio, WPSE's monthly broadcast of the Rotary Club of Erie meeting program at the Sheraton Erie Bayfront Hotel. Today's speaker is Dr. Walter Iwanenko, president of Gannon University.
Thank you, Karen. So just to start off, how many Gannon alums do we have in the room? Holy moly! Very nice, thank you. Usually when I start to do an introduction, I ask someone who knows the speaker for any embarrassing stories or something clever I can say. There were no embarrassing stories from his wife, so we're good on that. Today we welcome the son of immigrants, who is also the eighth president of Gannon University. He is an occupational therapist and an epidemiologist whose six-year tenure at Gannon University's provost and vice president for student experience has earned him a reputation as a creative problem solver and an advocate for academic excellence. There's much more in his bio. It's in the newsletter. I won't read it all, but I will say that Dr. Iwanenko will speak to us on the changes in higher education, the number of colleges that have closed in 2023 and 2024, the colleges that are expected to close in 24 and 25, and what Gannon is doing to ensure its success. Welcome to Rotary, Dr. Iwanenko.
I was warned about staying on time, so I'm starting the timer because I like to start on time and finish on time. I have to tell you a great story about when I first came to Erie about 7 years ago, 8 years ago now, and I was interviewing for the vice president position at Gannon. I stayed at the Sheraton. I stayed at this hotel. And I was never in downtown Erie, and it's a shame because I'm from Buffalo. It wasn't like I had to go very far, but I never was downtown. And when I got to the room and I opened up the windows and I saw this beautiful waterfront, I took a couple pictures and I sent it to my wife and I said, can you believe how beautiful downtown Erie is? And so I'm happy to say since then, Mary and I have made our home in Erie. We have three children. And we're really also very proud. Our children are adults. We have a couple grandbabies now. But our oldest daughter is an attorney here in Erie who's focusing on immigration. Our second daughter is in Buffalo. She finished a term with the Air Force and is raising a family there. And our youngest, our son, is working as an engineer in Erie. So two out of our three are young professionals here in Erie and also are calling Erie their home. So we're extremely proud. I also just really want to commend the Rotary for all the fantastic work that you do. It's very impressive, and when I got the request to come and speak, I was honored. So thank you very much. Make sure that I get this. So the plan for, and it's already this afternoon, but the plan is to really talk about the headwinds of higher education. Higher education is changing rapidly around us, like it is in many of your businesses. And for a variety of reasons. What's our plan for sustainability, and then how are we addressing that? I want to share some major initiatives with you. I know it's tough, might be tough to see this chart from where you're at. However, I just want you to pay attention to the direction of the lines in each one of these graphs. Each one of these graphs represents a different state. And this is a state-by-state projection of what the percent change in high school graduates coming forward. And if you notice, it doesn't matter what state it is, the majority of these are going down. So back in 2008, when we had some changes in the economy, people stopped having as many children. What's not being talked about in many of the political races that you're hearing, these are some of the lowest birth rates in the history of the country we're having right now. We don't have enough births to meet the demand of the workforce going forward. And we're seeing that right now in higher education. So we have less high school students going to college. There are some increases, like, for example, North Dakota has an increase. And, you know, for Gannon or Mercyhurst or Edinburgh or Allegheny, you know, for us to go out and recruit the three students out of North Dakota, it's probably not worth our time, right? So, you know, we have to be strategic about where we're going to get our students from. And this is what we're looking at. I also want to point out, you know, what kind of trend that's caused now, because we have less domestic students. This is a graph, and thank you, I forgot I had a pointer here, which is fantastic. Back in 2014, 2015, this is the percentage of the increase in the number of global students coming to the United States. So we saw a nice increase in 2014, 2015, 10%. Then we see another increase in 2015, 2016. What happened in 2016, 2017? No, not, it was a little early for COVID. We had an election. So during that election, we had a change in administration. I will tell you that our visa approval rates from some country went from 90% to 5% overnight. So institutions across the United States saw a really big decrease in global students, and you could see that in the graph. Then COVID hit. That didn't help. And then after COVID, actually the end of COVID, it was down 15% year after year. And then after COVID, we saw an increase. So think about this for a minute. If you're a college president and you're looking at a decreased high school population, where are you going to go for your next recruitment class? You're going to go international. And I will say we were ahead of that, and Gannon has done a really nice job recruiting. About 25% of our overall student population are global students now from about 70 different countries. Now, the question is, we have another election coming up. None of us know what may happen. Could we see another decline? We could. That could really impact our enrollment. So this is something that we're very much aware of. We're facing many of the other challenges you're all facing in running your business. I mean, we saw inflation at a really, really high rate over the last couple years, and we know it's coming down right now. But when you really average out that inflation, we're seeing a jump of about 15 to 20%, depending on what you were reading. There was just an article that came out from the state system of higher education, and they've received almost a 25% increase over the last 5 to 7 years from the state to meet their operating budget because of inflation. We don't have that ability. So we have to rely on tuition. We have to rely on increasing our tuition. And if we increased our tuition to 25% increase, we wouldn't have any students, right? So that's another challenge. It's the cost. It's inflation that's hitting us. This is the average institutional discount rate. I know this is probably not going to be a shock, but no one pays sticker price. Right? The freshmen don't pay sticker price. We all have discount rates, and it varies from institution to institution. What's been happening as competition keeps getting tougher, right? Less high school students. It's costing us more to recruit students. And so the discount rate is creeping up. It's not sustainable. Because if you continue your discount rate, you're not making enough to pay your bills. And so we're seeing that as a challenge. We're offering students discount packages, financial aid packages, and the consumer, the student, and the families they're really smart, right? So just like when you're buying a car, you take the offer letter and you go to the next dealer and say, well, this is what they're offering me. So students and families are doing that, and they're shopping, and they should. But this is not sustainable. And you could see the rate creeping up. There are institutions that are at a 70 to 80% discount rate to try to get their freshman class filled. The rising wages in business, you're all aware of this, right? We've had to pay people more to recruit them. So on the left is the percent change. So this is the cost of wages and salaries and benefits, and we've seen a 5, 6% increase on average. In some areas, it's more. But when you look at the constant dollar, that increase hasn't, our people haven't been able to buy more for their dollar, right? Because the price of eggs has gone up, and travel and hotel and restaurant. So everything's gone up, so you really haven't seen an increase. It's costing us more to recruit faculty and recruit staff and to keep them. And people know, because the job market has been so open, they can leave your institution and get an automatic raise. And that's we're all dealing with that right now. I want to talk a little bit about healthcare costs, because our healthcare costs have been kind of under control. I will tell you this, Gannon, we've not had an increase in our healthcare premium to our employees in 10 years. We haven't increased in 10 years. This year, because of what we're all seeing. You could see in 24, average was a 7% increase across the industry. This is the first time in 10 years we've had to increase the cost to our employees because we just couldn't absorb it anymore. So we've done a really, we're self-insured, and many of you may be as well, but we couldn't sustain that any longer. So how is this affecting Pennsylvania, the demographic change? And this is important to all of you who have to hire people. This is the change in potential students. So in Pennsylvania, when you look at the number of students in a 10-year period from 2010 to 2020, it's almost 18,000 students we've seen a decrease. And look at the projections going forward out into 2023. We're talking a massive decrease in the number of students going forward. So I guess I don't want to scare anybody, but the message is not getting any better. We're all going to have a tough time recruiting. And if you were paying attention to this budget that just came out, in the governor's budget that was just passed, they're actually now, the state schools are now offering discount rates to out-of-state students. That never happened. You guys all, you know, the golden rule, right? If you were an in-state student, you got a real good discount. If you're out-of-state, you paid a much higher. That's going away. Why? Student population. Everybody is fighting to recruit students, and they've had to make that adjustment. And we're seeing that across the board, which makes it even tougher for the private institutions to recruit. This is a brand new term. Have any of you heard of in this non-consumer market that's been happening in higher ed? So the non-consumers, this is that group of students that they're deciding not to go to school. So they're just saying, you know, college might not be worth it. Getting a degree, it's a scam. I'm not going to make any more money. There's other things I could be doing. That is increasing. So we've seen actually an increase in the high school graduation rates. K through 12 has been doing a better job of graduating students, 7% increase. But the number of those deciding not to go to school is rising. They're just choosing not to. And here's, this is the scarier part for me. 60% living at home with their parents. So they're not going, yeah, and you got one? So you got one. One in three not working. So not only are they not going to school, but they're also not working. You know, you when you look at the breakdown on demographics, almost 50% are white. When you look at the income levels, there's not a huge gap between the individuals that are deciding to go to college and the ones that are going to college. So this non-consumer market is increasing, and the majority are male. Almost 60% are male, and the overall college going rate overall, not considering the non-consumers, male enrollment is dropping dramatically. So you could help us by sending that student to Gannon. We would appreciate that. That's true. At least that's happening. But do you see what's happening? So you have less students, you've got more students not deciding to go to school, the cost is rising to be able to, both operationally and in personnel, the costs are rising. Here's a graph of looking at state by state on this non-consumer rate. And it's a little scary when you're looking at some of the rates where you're expecting increases or a non-consumption rate that's going up over 40%, not going to school. What does that mean for the workforce? In certain areas, it could be detrimental. This is public information. I want to show you what's happening. We all know that Penn West went through a merger, and some people are asking, you know, why did they have to do that? And I want to preface this with this idea, like, look, our region, we are much stronger by having all of our higher ed institutions strong as they can be. Because if you're going to attract big businesses, they want talent. They want access to the talent. So, but if you look at what they've been up against and why the merger had to take place, when you go back to 2014, there were almost 21,000 students between the three institutions. And when you look at that number of 2023, it's 7,500. That's all three together. This is what they're up against. And we all know, you know, if you lose Edinburgh, that community's devastated. We don't want that to happen. So what could we be doing to get more students go to school and take advantage of a higher ed. You know, our enrollment, you know, people have said, Gannon's doing great, enrollment is skyrocketing. Not really. You know, we've gone up in the same year about 3%, but we haven't gone down. That's not sustainable. We're going to have a hard time not losing domestic enrollment going forward. And so we need to change and we need to do things differently. So we've looked at a 3%, we've seen a 3% increase, and that's going to be tough to maintain going forward. The new growth is staying steady. And to me, that's tough. That's tough to kind of swallow because I want to keep growing. And it's possible if we do things a little bit differently. I'm going to share a couple ways that we could do that. This is a growing list. When I first started talking about this, I had this in two slides. Every time I've given a presentation, I've updated. This is the list of closures in 2023. And some of these names might sound familiar. Some of them aren't too far away. And they're all over the country. It's not limited to one geographic area. So this list started 2023. Here's the 2024 list. And I actually had to add another whole slide to this because just within the last couple weeks, a couple more institutions have decided. And, you know, some of these schools, again, when you're looking at Goddard and Wells, you know, these are historic liberal arts institutions that are no longer in existence. These are some recent additions. So a couple of these, and I don't know if you guys have read about the situation that happened at University of the Arts in Philly, that they just shut down. They didn't give any warning. They didn't let the state know. They didn't tell their students. President left campus. All of a sudden, students came to campus. There was no one there. Awful. Awful, awful, awful. So when higher ed is trying to deal with all this, you're also dealing with reputation, right? Is higher ed worth it? Well, look what's happening. Look what they did to those students. That's tough. It hurts all of us when that happens. These are the institutions that have already announced they're closing in 2025, and that list will continue to grow. And this is what's happening in the world around us in higher ed. So what's our plan for long-term sustainability? What kind of things can we do differently? And I would encourage you, as I'm talking, please, if you have some questions, put them in the parking lot, write them down, and we'll have some time for questions after. This is the model that we came out with, our team got together. So I've been president since July 1st, so I made it through the first year. When I became president, my mother told me one thing, Walter, don't screw this up. So I'm trying really hard not to have that happen. But we needed a plan, right? We needed a plan. So in the middle is this idea of relentless balanced incrementalism. We got to keep growing. All of you that have been involved in business, there's no such thing as a stagnant organization. You're either going up or you're going down. There's no flat line. We are going to relentlessly keep growing, even facing the challenges that we know are ahead of us, because we have to. We built it off of four pillars. One, financial optimization. Our systems have to talk to each other. Any business, the systems have to talk to each other, and right now our systems could be better. I have departments where data is not being shared like I would want it shared. I'm asking for data, and I want it now. I wanted it yesterday if I'm asking for it, right? But I'm having a hard time getting it because our systems are outdated, and we need to invest in technology to make that happen. We've got to have financial planning. We've got to be disciplined. Enrollment. We're keeping the gas down on global enrollment, but I'm not interested in increasing that proportion. So I mentioned our global enrollment's about 25%. I don't want it to go above 25%. But for that not to go above 25%, I have to increase the domestic enrollment to keep the proportion the same. So we got a good amount, but we got to get domestic enrollment back up. As you all know, recruiting customers takes a lot of money and a lot of work, right? You got to keep them. And so retention is critical. We can't just get the students to our campus. They've got to have a good student experience so that they stay. And the best recruiters for new students are your current students and their families. If they have a good experience, they'll help you get more students. Domestic first year I talked about, and many of you know or you may not know that we have a campus in Ruskin, Florida. So we started that in 2016, and that campus is solely focused on graduate healthcare, OT, PT, speech, physician's assistant, and it's just south of Tampa. We did that because we knew this was coming. and we needed to diversify where our students are coming from. With everything going around in higher ed right now, we are seeing more mergers than we ever have, and colleges and universities are joining. Could that happen down the road? Possibly. But we have to keep an eye out, and we have to be aware of what's happening around us. Well-being, got to take care of our employees. There are institutions that haven't had raises in multiple years. It's really hard to keep your people when you're not paying them what they should be paid. And we have had a couple years where we haven't had raises. My goal is for that not to happen again. So we're going to really hard. But we are highly tuition-driven, right? If enrollment goes down, there's your revenue. So it's very hard to give raises. We got to make sure that we're keeping the enrollment up where we need it. Got to make sure that we're taking care of our students and the student experience. And, you know, here's one of the hard parts. And many of you have kids, so you know what I'm talking about. Try asking them what they want. Try to get an answer. I had a 15-year-old niece I picked up from basketball camp. How was it? Good. What'd you learn? Stuff. Did you like it? Yes. I got 18 and 20-year-olds to do the same thing at the college. So when you're trying to figure out what the student experience is, when we could capture that, it'll be we could write some books and make some money on it, because that's a challenge. And then mission. We got to stay true to our mission. We are one of 10 diocesan universities in the United States, which means we have a direct connection with the Diocese of Erie and the bishop in our community, and that means something. We have to make sure that we're holding true to who we are and the mission and why we're here, and that's to provide an education to those in the most need, those who may not otherwise have access. And many people don't realize we have programs that help do that. We have an Archbishop Gannon Scholarship. City of Erie students that are Pell eligible, which means they fall into certain income brackets, they come to Gannon for free. We have over 70 students that are going to Gannon through that program. So, and that's because we're a mission-driven institution. So what are some major initiatives? Erie has a lot of assets. We've got incredible assets. So we've gone all out on taking advantage of our assets and how do we bring people to Erie. This year, we know that the airport has been an issue. It's been a topic. There's been a pilot shortage. So we started a new program in aviation and business management so that students can get a pilot's degree when they're getting their degree here at Gannon. So, Nick, I know you graduated from Gannon recently. Maybe you were thinking, damn, I wish they had that when I was there. Maybe I would have became a pilot. But we're really excited about partnering with the aviation industry to get people out into the workforce. If you're going to learn how to fly, just a show of hands. How many of you would like a pilot trained at a big flight school in Florida where all the poor weather flying was done in simulation, or an Erie trained pilot where they actually flew in snow? I'll take that burden right there, right? That's an asset. Actually, the Erie Airport is an incredible place to fly because it has all the same controls, control tower, as JFK. And so their instrument training, everything can be done right here in Erie. Let's take advantage of our strengths. Project Neptune. Anybody hear of this? Anybody here? Okay, just want to make sure. Why Project Neptune? There are six components to Project Neptune. It's not just the Blaskow Library. There are six components. A Great Lakes Research and Education Center, that's the library, that's what's going into there. There's also an additive manufacturing lab that was built on the sixth floor, that's done. That opened up last fall. Greenhouses, I'm going to show you a picture of the new greenhouse just opened. Neptune is not a pipe dream, Neptune is happening. And it is our commitment to water security. Why? Because it's an asset. It's an asset, and we should be proud of the lake. We need to take care of it. We need to make sure it's here for future generations, and the university is committed to be a part of that. There are three other initiatives that are in motion, but they're not close to being done like the first three I mentioned. An EPA lake health monitoring facilities. This is a lab. All of our water testing right now in Erie gets sent out to an EPA-certified lab outside of the region, which means when they close the beaches, that's based on testing that might be a day or two old. Well, now your dog has swam, you've swam, you've used the beaches, and we're using outdated information. If we have a lab here in Erie, we can run our testing here so that we can do same-day closures and making sure that we're keeping our community safe. And then there's a whole other... That could be a whole nother hour presentation on the value of an EPA lab here. We need an upgraded research vessel. So our current research vessel, any People, Erieites, Little Toot boat. That's our research vessel. 75 years old. It's been good to us, but it's really tough to get the boat out to the middle of the lake because we can't get it back. So we're we need to upgrade the boat. And then public health and policy. Look, internally, as we roll out this initiative, we need to hire talent, and we need to bring people into Erie. We need to change our own curriculum to make sure it matches, and so we need to invest in that. Here's a quick map that we did. We're just highlighting some of the destinations along our lakeshore. So when people come to visit, where do they go? They go to Waldemar, they go to Tom Ridge Center, they go to the lighthouse, they go to the beaches. What we're trying to do is think about how do we create more destinations to get people downtown? How do we get more people downtown to spend money and stay in the hotels and go to the restaurants? So part of putting the research center, the education center on the waterfront is we have access because our students can walk from campus, but how do we create another destination? How do we get people to stay here? So a family can come down, they can go to Presque Isle. Mom and dad can go to the beer garden, right? They can catch a show while the kids are at a camp at the Blaskow Library learning about water research and going to the Maritime Museum and learning how to build boats next door. How cool is that? That's how you get people downtown. So, and that's been one of our focuses. Originally, we had a building in play. That didn't work out. It was controlled by the Port Authority. They had some other plans for it. The Blaskow Library became the new location. This is a map of the library floors, about 90,000 square feet. This is the amount of space that we're planning to occupy. So when people say we're taking over the library, I'm not a mathematician, but I don't think so. It's only 3,000 square feet, so we're not taking over the whole library. And I'm also going to share this with you. You guys are the first group to see publicly what the plans look like inside. So of the space, the 3,000 square foot, we have an exhibition area, which is an education center, and I'm going to show you what that's going to look like. We have a NOAA on a sphere, which is incredible when you see what that looks like. And then there is going to be an education lab, so when we're having students there and running camps, it's also going to be used for other groups that can use that for training. And then we have a lab in the back that needs to be, that's not going to be open to the public because it needs to be controlled. There's going to be tanks in there. There's going to be things that have to be climate controlled so we can't have it open. That's what it's going to look like. So interactive, a lot of technology, learning about the lake, learning what's under the water, learning what swims. And then this map, that 3D globe, you're going to walk into this room and it's floats in the middle of the room. And you, as an Erie County resident, can go in there and you can run programs through there and see weather patterns and tidal changes, and you can take your kids in there, you can take your grandkids in there. That's a community asset. This now becomes a destination to get people into the library. That's exciting. Well, I'm excited about it. I don't know. Here's another view. This is all open, so as you're in the library walking in, you have clear access to it. And it's free. No charge. It's an asset to bring people into the library. This is the room, so kids, this is the room that will be used for trainings, summer camps. So this is the design phase. We have some open forums coming up where people can give, look at that, isn't it? That to me is amazing. And now we'll have that free in downtown Erie for people to come and use. Greenhouses, this is a picture as part of Neptune I mentioned. Greenhouse is up. Actually, this is what it looks like. It's also really cool, and this is a partnership with the Regional Science Consortium. This greenhouse is growing thousands of plants that will be planted out at Presque Isle. Why? You have to protect Presque Isle. You've got to remove the invasive species or else you change the dynamics. Anybody read they're spotting otters on Presque Isle now? That's fantastic. That brings people to Presque Isle. They want to see the otters. But that doesn't remain unless you take care of everything around the otters, which includes getting rid of invasive species and putting native species in. So our students will be doing the work, the community will be doing the work, growing plants and taking them. Again, building off assets, airport, water, Presque Isle. We also have an incredible industry around us, including healthcare. This is also very new. We are going to be bringing in a biomedical research company into Erie called First Ascent. They were featured in Nature magazine, which is one of the premier research magazines. This is a cancer research company, and they will be taking up a floor in IHAC. And what's really amazing, we're building off of our strength, UPMC, AHN, proximity to Buffalo, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. This is an asset that we can take advantage of. We're also going to be collaborating with Allegheny Health and creating a med tech program to train people how to process these samples. It's a workforce development, bringing in research, bringing in workforce development. This is a snapshot of the jobs that they will be hiring, about 100 jobs. They'll scale up to about 100 jobs. And the med tech, the med lab scientist job, that's a $100,000 job starting out. It's a 4-year degree. The clinical lab technician is a 2-year degree, and that's a $50,000 starting job. This is what Erie needs to grow. And here's a picture. The lab is designed, ready to go. I'm at that time, and boy, I'm right at 30 minutes. Headwinds are coming. We have a plan. We think we can help be an economic driver, and we really believe that Erie is this incredible place to work, to play, to learn, and to live. And I'm going to stop there and take any questions that you might have. Yes?
One criticism that heard thrown at universities nationally is that there is an overabundance of non-educational personnel, so administration in between counselors, overseers. Has Gannon, what are your thoughts on that in relation to Gannon? Do you think that, have you looked at the relation there, and do you think that might be an issue?
I think that it varies by institution. Thank you for reminding me. So for folks that are online, the question is, higher ed is taking some criticism for being inefficient, too many administrators, too many non-teaching personnel. I think it varies. My answer is it varies by institution. I think we've seen, especially in some of the institutions at the big state institutions, it's a little less controlled. I have to tell you, smaller institutions like ours, we have to watch our bottom line. So we're very cognizant of personnel, administration, looking at efficiencies. So I think it does happen in some areas. I don't think you're going to see as much of it in the smaller institutions. Yes. Here, and then we'll go here.
I'm just curious. So being a Gannon grad from the doctoral program there, I have to admit to disappointment that those programs aren't available anymore. I think one of the things that was a real benefit, at least for me, being a woman, being a mom, having a local university be able to provide me with that experience versus having to travel, you know, is to me critical. Are there any plans?
Yeah. So the question is, we did have a PhD program at Gannon in organizational learning and leadership, and I made the decision to shut it down. So I'm up here, so I will own it. And the reason why, the market changed. So many programs sprouted up around us, especially online, that we couldn't compete at the price point. So our enrollment actually dropped significantly. I will say, and I'll go back to your question about efficiencies. One of the areas that where institutions fail is they do not look at their degree offerings as a product line. And I know that's tough to hear, but sometimes your product line is no longer relevant in the market. So institutions get themselves in trouble when they hold on to programs. You've seen a lot of institutions that have closed down programs like in languages. I'm a big fan of the languages. However, students aren't enrolling in those programs. So you have to make those decisions. We need to have a PhD program, and we're now going through the process of looking at market demand and relevance to begin another PhD program. Also look at the delivery. Does it need to be online? Should it be hybrid? Should it be face-to-face? So we have to answer those questions. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Yes?
Doctor, thank you for all this information. It's fabulous. And as an alum, it's nice to hear, it's wonderful to hear that you're looking at the future can you comment on the pros and cons of federal payoff of student debt?
Yeah, I can. So the first, some really great things were said about the university, and then second, just so I could repeat it for the online audience. Second, question about the pros and cons of federal aid. I'm going to speak. I think it's not a great idea to fully forgive loans. I think there needs to be some skin in the game. I think it's when folks are making the decision and they are taking loans to go to school, it's an investment, right? And then the idea is that you go out and you work and you pay off that investment. I do agree with programs that when people go into certain fields, such as social work, those aren't really high-paying positions, but they're serving the community. I think there should be programs to offset the loans. And if I was going to offer those discounts, it would be in specific fields to help those students who are going to have a tougher time paying the loans back. But I do think that a full total forgiveness of student loans is not a wise use of dollars. Yes?
Recently in the news, I'm sure you've seen a lot of major universities having issues with protests regarding issues in the Middle East.
Yep.
And how it's been affected by overseas students. You talked about your global students earlier. Has Gannon seen any issues with school culture or anti-Semitism in these past few months in relation to that?
No, I mean, we have not, but we're also not in a position where we're having to manage 20,000 students. Because we have a more of a close-knit community, we're able to get in front of it. For example, when some of the issues arose with Palestine, we gathered students together and had conversations. We're able to be a little bit more nimble. And I'll also say, if you pay attention to many of the institutions that had conflicts, they weren't religious institutions. They were big, mostly state institutions, but also institutions that have big endowments, a lot of investments overseas, which caused a lot of those issues. Now, I'll give you an example of how we head things off. If you're paying attention to the news, there's issues in Bangladesh right now with some government policy changes. We have a large Bangladesh population at Gannon. We gathered those students together. They actually wanted to have a protest on 7th Street to support their brothers and sisters in solidarity in Bangladesh. But we headed that off, and we had a meeting. They gathered, and we had a conversation and allowed them to express themselves. It's done because we're able to intervene. Does that help?
Yeah.
Yes?
I'm just wondering, with your whole enrollment strategy, I worked at Mercer University for 10 years, and I ran the office that was all for graduate programs. So they were about to get rid of it, let's just say that, because it was failing. Now, I'm going back almost 15, 20 years. We were able to put a strategy in place for recruiting these very students that you're talking about who are not going to college, or who may have 1 year at college and drop out, or who are veterans coming out of service and have the GI Bill or the Yellow Ribbon or whatever it's called now. And there are employers in the region who have tuition reimbursement programs. Do you have a piece in your enrollment, or is that something that's defunct now?
So the question is related to looking at the non-consumer population, the adult population, veterans coming back. How are we factoring them into our enrollment plan? One of the barriers are there are not in the Erie market. There are not great numbers in either one of those areas. So to create an individual program for just veterans or just the adult learner, we never get enough volume to be able to run it. We're a business. You can't run a class with four students, right? It doesn't make economic sense. But we are looking at our bridge programs that bring students in to help them get started at the university level so that we can build support to help them be successful. We've looked at some of the adult learner programs, and we just can't get the volume to make them work. But we think if we merge them with non-consumer, veteran, and adult learning, we can make it work. And we're looking at those models right now.
So how many students do you need to have classes?
So right now, we try to have at least a minimum of 10 students in a class to cover the cost.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, Brock, last one.
I'm here. Like, please.
So you mentioned running, thinking more on the business side of running the university and treating your offerings as a product. And you also brought up less people leaving high school and going to college. Do you think that is an economic issue of people simply going home, staying home, and that's it? Or do you see it more as an issue of the more competitive jobs that don't require college education are more competitive? And if it's the latter, do you think that's just a market shift and that'll be the new normal?
I think it's a combination. So the question is, what do I view as one of the factors in students not making the commitment to go to university? I think it's a perception of value. Is college worth it? And the job market's been pretty open. If you talk to especially manufacturing around Erie, I'm still hearing they can't fill positions. So I think the job market's been open. So the qualifications of requiring a college degree have gone to the wayside in some areas simply because you have to hire. So valued perception. I do see this. I don't see this as a long term. I do think the pendulum is going to shift the other way back to the middle at some point. You know, I will tell you, there's a lot of predictions on what's going to happen with the economy in the United States. Actually, recessions are very good for higher ed. And I know that sounds awkward, but when you have a recession and the job market tightens up, people go back to school and they decide they want to go to school to get an education. So I think a lot of it's going to factor on what's happening in the economy. You know, this has been a weird economy because, you know, even interest rates went up, but even though the housing sales have decreased, we're still selling houses. The job market is still fairly strong. So those are all factors. You know, I will close with this because I know we're hitting time. I finished 1 year as president, so declining high school population, increased cost of doing business, discount rates going off the table, and, you know, people have asked, well, how's your first year been? I don't know. Did you see the slides? You know, I had hair before I took the job, right? But I love it, and I'm up for the challenge, and I think, you know, our institution is up for the challenge, and we're making sure that our people are on board. And I think out of the chaos, there's going to be opportunity. We just got to make sure that we're on the right side of those opportunities. So I really appreciate your time, everybody, and thank you.
Thanks for listening to Money Radio, WPSE's monthly broadcast of the Rotary Club of Erie meeting program at the Sheraton Erie Bayfront Hotel. You can replay this episode or access other archived shows by visiting the Podcasts tab on our homepage.